VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 568, recorded on March 25th, 2020.
Hello and welcome to the 568th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 401st episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
I don't need to ask what either of you have been playing. I can probably guess right off the top of my head. So, Scott, tell us all about Animal Crossing.
Well... do it with more enthusiasm next time. It's Animal Crossing that I've been playing, and it's a, I think, big improvement over the entire series. The graphics are beautiful. The effects on the weather effects you get are much, better. Trees are swaying in the wind, and it has beautiful music as you're walking around your town. And you start off landing on the island with a platoon playing, and you get two villagers right off the bat, and you then immediately start exploring the island, collecting fruits and getting stone and iron and clay from rocks and collecting bugs and just seeing what the island has to offer as Tom Nook takes your stuff and with his two nephews, Tim and Tommy. And and you build first you have a tent, and then you get a house, and then you build out your house. And of course, in this game, you have miles instead of just bells. And pretty much every action you get gets you miles, whether you're collecting bugs or fishing or building something or planting or just, as long as you're doing something, you get miles. And then you can use those to get special perks from Tom. And of course, pay for your first house. And then he switches over to bells. And it's been really fun playing the game and seeing other people play it. And you're synced up with real time. So you get your blathers to come, and then you have to wait for a whole day for him to build his museum. And the museum is freaking gorgeous when you get that thing open. The aquariums are beautiful to look at. The bugs and the fossil area. It's just
beautiful. You know what happened to the game, right? Abilities you haven't gotten to.
Yeah, you can landscape. You can move rivers and I think the mountains, or at least elevations.
It turns into a cross between Spore and Minecraft.
Yeah, a little bit. So that's also new in this game. There's also, you expand your inventory at one point. You get a inventory ring where you can access your tools via a little quick pop-up ring menu, which is very useful. The store that you get, Nook's Cranny, has a drop-off, so if it's after hours, you could drop off an item to be sold, which was something I really wanted in New Leaf when I would collect bugs and want to sell them. So, yeah, they did a lot of improvements,
now,
I think.
You say it looks better, but actually, it looks exactly the same as even the first one. But the difference is that there's a lot more... There's a lot sharper graphics, and you can do more with it. Because the original Animal Crossing, had the same look, exact same look, same
style.
Big-headed look, yeah.
Yeah.
But you couldn't affect the land. You couldn't, it had graphical limitations, but
it's like it has a high def polish, if you will. Then same style, but high def polish.
Also have deformation and all that stuff because, like I said, with the landscaping and all that, so.
Yeah.
It's like, it's never changed, but it's changed in different ways that allow you to affect the way it used to look.
Right. Like I said,
whale shark yet?
I have not captured sharks, but I captured an oarfish, and I captured a sturgeon. I think it's just really random what you get sometimes, because in the New Leaf, you could tell when you were going to get a shark because of the fin. But this time I got like an oarfish, and it looked like the shadow didn't look any different from a sea bass, basically.
No, but you get a whale shark.
No, I have not. I haven't gotten any sharks at all yet.
It's one of the most difficult things in the game to get, the whale shark. Okay. Because it only appears at certain times of year.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, I don't even know if we're in that time of year then.
I don't know. Well, I mean, in-game time of year. Oh, right. Yeah. Now, isn't there a way that it syncs up with your current...
Yes, and you're not supposed to time travel, or at least, I mean, I don't time travel, but the other thing is
you can't time travel anymore. It locked that cheat out, so you can't do it
apparently,
anymore.
Apparently, some people are still doing it. I don't mess with that, but the other thing is that the holidays are locked behind DLCs that will come when those holidays are actually here. And those updates will then come, and you'll get those holidays when they're actually here and not when you alter your console's date and time.
Okay, so the whale shark, it's only in the sea. It's available all day, but it's only available between June and September.
Well, then that's why I haven't gotten it, because I didn't time travel to June and September.
But here's the thing. It can be sold for 13,000 bells.
Okay, that's cool.
I mean, it's available right now in the Southern Hemisphere from December to March.
Ah, then that's who's getting it, people in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, but you notice there's a little bit of a non-overlap there. So apparently it's not going to be available from June to May for anybody. It's not going to be available from October and November for anybody. So there's going to be like 2 months in which it's not even around.
Yeah, I think that's been an intended feature of the game since the beginning. You would have to do things at certain times of the year. It was to kind of incentivize you that there's always something to look forward to at every point of the year, whether it's a holiday, a festival, or certain bugs and fishes are only available during certain times of the year. Because like that's the whole point of the game, is you're doing an experience, and it's throughout the year, not just, 30 hours and I'm done with this game forever. You're supposed to play it a few hours a day kind of thing. And again, it's an experience. You're building your island or your neighborhood, and you're talking to the villagers, and maybe you're playing with your friends and family on same console or over the internet. And, you're going through something together. It's like it's a little bit of a cultural experience, I think.
So, TJ, tell us about Doom Eternal.
I haven't played it yet.
Really?
Nope, not yet.
One little thing, I was watching videos, and Doom Eternal actually has an advanced graphics system with texture overlays, and on the PC, you can get thousands of frames per second if you want, with high graphics.
Yeah, it's a pretty well optimized game, from what I understand, except for HDR. I hear HDR is having a bad time on it.
I'm just saying, thousands of frames per second, that's buttery smooth.
Mm-hmm. Can I just add one thing that I really love and appreciate? The thing that went around with Isabelle and Doom Guy kind of promoting each other and promoting the games. Two games that are on two different companies and two different consoles, and they just, like, they're like diametric opposites of each other, too, the genres. And they're like, let's just support each other. I think we need
That's
more
why
of that.
They support each other because they don't have the same audiences. They're not competing for the same people.
But they wouldn't. Even so, I still think we need more of that. Because there's a lot of people that would be like, that if they were a first person shooting gaming person, would hate Animal Crossing and don't get Animal Crossing and think the people that play Animal Crossing are casual and losers and all that stuff.
Yeah, I'd like to see Cuphead appear in Animal Crossing.
I just think that's a good attitude to have, is to be supportive of other games and want them to succeed, even if they were same genres.
I think there's more crossover than you might think between people that like Animal Crossing and Doom.
I would hope so, because we always seem to focus on the negative. Like, people just – all I ever see is a lot of times people –
We'll get
not
around
getting...
to the negative later in the podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't They're just different flavors. And I don't feel like eating vanilla all the time. Sometimes I want to switch to chocolate, but then I'll go back to vanilla when I feel like it.
Yeah, but that's PC gamers too. When they want to play Animal Crossing, they just play Stardew Valley.
But there's just a lot of people that just feel like, oh, the only good games are shooting games, and then they don't care about any of the other. You know,
thinks that. No one over the age of 14 thinks that.
Okay.
But
yeah.
So what have you been playing, TJ?
I played around with Bleeding Edge this last week.
Oh, okay. So that's the new game by Ninja Theory. And I can't say it's a hero fighter, because it's a lot of melee combat. It's more like, was it Paladin or?
It's definitely sort of a hero shooter, but like it is. I would say it's more like Paladins or Smite than it is like Overwatch. That said, it's pretty fun. I liked it. It doesn't have an enormous cast of characters, but they do have a bunch planned. But like the cast they do have is interesting. They're varied. I really enjoyed this one character. It's a zombie that has like a mechanical snake that is like embedded in it. So it uses the zombie as sort of a conduit to walk around, and it's a support type character. And you can create a field that hurts enemies and heals allies. You can shield up yourself or one other ally. You can put a voodoo hex on somebody and cause them to take more damage from all sources. One of my favorite things was that there's certain maps. Like, it has a lot of maps, but they're all based around a certain game mode. One of them is, like, this energy cell collection where you have to pick up so many cells and try to keep them and survive with them and drop them off in deposit spots once they open. There's control, which is basically just control three different areas and try to rack up as much points as possible. But one of the more interesting aspects is that some of the maps have like pitfalls. Like there's one where two trains just run right through the middle of the map at certain intervals. And the snake dude has access to, you choose one of two supers at the beginning when you choose the character. So the snake dude, he has a buff that can like super power up a teammate and give them more health, give them more attack power, or he can take over an enemy and hypnotize them for a little bit and control them. So I hypnotized someone and walked them directly into the oncoming train. And it's like, it's fun. You can do all sorts of fun stuff like that with the characters.
Yeah. I mean, it's free on Game Pass. It's also just $30 if you just want to play. I think it's on Steam. I mean, everything. Microsoft hasn't made things a Windows 10 exclusive. I think they have released it on Steam, too.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I played it on Steam. You still have to log into Xbox Live through Steam, like once you load up the game, which is kind of weird. But
well, I mean, they're doing it on the Xbox Live servers,
mm-hmm.
So you know. But at least you get Cheevers.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, what's been in my brain lately with everything that's been going on with Ninja Theory. I'm just wondering if they're ever going to create a sequel to Heavenly Sword, which was their first game, which is way back when.
Yeah, that's been quite a while. They might like do like an. I think I can imagine them doing like a remaster, but I don't know.
I mean, here's the thing. You know what I would like to see them do? Make a reskin DMC. Because for all the gripes that people have about DMC Devil May Cry, is that they didn't like the characters, but the gameplay was great. So if they didn't have that kind of you know, that kind of baggage with having to, you know, deal with the Devil May Cry characters and just redid it with all new characters that no one has any emotional attachment to. I wonder how well that would do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right, because they did, like, they nailed down the combat and, like, the platforming and the puzzle stuff. I really loved the dynamic between, like, the holy weapon and the dark weapon. And
go between two dimensions, like an upside-down dimension.
Mm-hmm. It was really cool how they handled it. So, I don't know. I think you're right. I think if they have took all that, everything they did with that game and just applied it to an original universe, then it would have It would have been really dope.
Yeah. By the way, I sent you a picture of the whale shark, Scott.
Okay.
It's actually twice the size of the character, but real whale sharks are even bigger.
Oh, yeah. I remember reading about them before, like when I was in school and learning about sharks, and the whale shark is really large. Man, that is huge, you're right. And like I said, I caught the oarfish, which is a pretty big eel, apparently. I had to Google that because I wanted to see what it looked like. And it's always fascinating. That's the other thing about this game, is even a little bit educational, teaching you about fish and bugs and natural history with the dinosaurs. And you get to get little facts from Blathers, which I always think it's good when you have some educational content in a game.
Yeah. I've been playing a three-year-old game. Battle Chef Brigade Deluxe. For those who don't know, that's a game in which you play a chef, and you have to kill creatures, take their parts back to the kitchen, and make dishes out of them. It's basically Match 3 meets Castlevania meets Cooking Mama. And it's leaving Game Pass, but after I started playing it, I just shelled the $17 to keep it.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about Battle Chef Brigade.
Yeah,
it
was originally released on the Switch, like in 2017. Then it was released in PC last year, so. It's anime-esque, which means it's Americans doing anime. So it's sort of, I think it's trying to be genuinely anime, so you have, it's like someone who isn't very good at doing a Western accent trying to do a Western accent, you know? It has that slight overdone feel to it, like trying too hard. But it's fine. It's fun. There's a timed clock there, so when you want to get the really good ingredients, you have to kill the really tough creatures, but that'll eat up your time doing it. And then there's different things you can use that'll. The other thing I don't like is that it doesn't let you what the judges are going to want before you actually do anything. So it's like by luck. Like I have the pot that'll make the red ingredients go fast. No, they just want blue or green. So, but I enjoy seeing the kind of dishes it invents, because it actually titles the dishes based on what you put in the dish, and it knows if you seasoned it or stuff like that. So it's pretty fun, and it's published by Adult Swim Games, and I'm really starting to like Adult Swim Games a lot. They seem to know which games, they're like Devolver Digital, they know which games that are off the beaten path that they're going to take a chance at, but are good, you know? It's not like they're going to take a crap game and publish it. And games like Duck Game and this game and some other games that are really good. So yeah, I'm starting to really, think highly of Adult Swim Games. So no one's been playing Half-Life, Alex?
My boss has, and he loves it, and I've seen a whole bunch of videos of that game. It looks really fun.
But here's the thing. Valve actually talked about this today about the mods they're going to make. That they say inevitably someone's going to make a mod that you can play it without needing the VR equipment. And they said it's going to suck without a VR. It's not going to be very good, but without VR. It needs VR to work. And actually, there have been fans who have petitioned Valve, and Valve did make the thing, so that you could actually move, you know, turn, you know. Because stuff like Doom VR, you know, you hop from place to place to place, right? So in this, turning is difficult. So the Valve made it so that you can turn easier. I don't think people are as concerned about losing their lunch when playing.
It actually has three different types of locomotion too. You have it has smooth motion where you just like move the joystick and you move around. There's transfer motion, which is where you pick a spot and you see yourself sort of shift there. And then there's teleport motion, which is you pick a spot and you automatically go there. And I know they just released like a day one. I think it was a day one update that was meant to smooth out head motion, like turning. So I don't know. Like from what I've seen, in any case, the interactivity with objects in the world is incredible.
What's also interesting is that HP Hewlett-Packard just announced a new VR headset, which is being co-produced with Microsoft and Valve.
That's nice. So it's going to be something beyond the Valve Index?
I think it's going to be – I don't know what it's going to have better tech, and I think it's also going to be cheaper tech. So
right now, it seems though the Valve Index is probably the best way to play, Alex. I've heard that PSVR is like, don't even try it. But I don't know. I haven't heard from any of my Oculus friends if they've given it a go. But man, like every time I see it, like there's a video like that Valve themselves put up where you pick up a chair and catch a head crab with the legs of the chair and throw it off to the side. And it's just like that kind of interactivity would have been unheard of even 5 years ago.
So this VR is actually a follow-up to the Reverb, which they made with Microsoft. So you're doing it with Microsoft and Steam VR. The Reverb cost, I think, like $600. So this is probably going to be a – and apparently the original Reverb was part of Microsoft's mixed reality lineup, you know. So it's new standard means it's not going to be a cheap one, but it's not going to cost as much as Valve's $1,000 Index.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is that it's being co-produced between Microsoft and Valve. So it's specifically for Microsoft and Steam VR. And it has the Steam VR and the HP and the Microsoft logo on it.
Yeah.
So
one of the things I covered today was like this is just silly because like I imagine that it wouldn't be too hard to pull off in another VR game if they just gave you the functionality. But somebody actually like with the pandemic going on and school canceled for most places this year, a math teacher took Half-Life Alyx and like it has a marker function in there where you can take markers and you can draw on a glass window. And he straight up drew an entire he drew an entire math lesson on the like grammatical language of angles to present to a class. It's like that this game can just like allow you to do stuff like that. And like I've seen other people do other things with it that are just like not probably not what Valve was intending, but who knows. And it's cool. It's really cool to see, like, it kind of is a benchmark. Like, Valve always said, and a lot of people from Valve have said, they weren't going to put out a Half-Life unless they actually had something to improve upon and make.
I don't give a shit about Half-Life, Alyx. I care about Half-Life 3.
Right. But, like, several people from Valve at this point have said they aren't just going to make Half-Life 3 to make Half-Life 3.
They're not going
to
make it at all.
They're only going to make it when they have something like a benchmark to create.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. You know, they had the Source engine, and they fucked it up by being assholes about it. Next time they invent a new engine, they shouldn't be restrictive with other people using it, and don't view people who are using the engine as competitors.
Right now, they're pretty much completing Source 2, right? So
I don't know. I don't care.
I really
don't care what Valve does anymore.
They were almost done. They were almost complete with Source 2 by the time they started development on Half-Life Alyx, from what I understand.
Whatever. Speaking of the pandemic, it's not in today's news, but the developers of Plague Inc. released a free DLC which allows you to do the reverse and try to cure a worldwide pandemic. Because in that game, Plague Inc., you're trying to kill the world with a pandemic. So, yeah. And it's actually for charity. They're donating $250,000. So
that's nice that they're donating to charity.
Yeah, it's kind of odd to play Plague Inc. when Plague Inc. is happening in real life right now.
Yeah. That it like I said,
it's so
a,
funny now.
it's a real cultural event that's going on right now. This is like a moment in history, and it's interesting to see what aspects of our world are really getting involved with it. And, you know, we got, like, the gaming community, of course, with
that's
people
the,
playing.
That's the fun thing about that's the good thing about video gaming is that it's an indoor activity.
Mm-hmm. And you can play with your friends online, and there's a lot of people helping with that. Like you said about that math teacher. Also, LeVar Burton's wants to do reading to your kids online with a
reading
I guess video
Rainbow.
Stream.
I will say this though: once the curfew is over, the next morning there's going to be so many people drunk in the gutters. It's not going to get any funny. People are going to drink until they can't see anymore.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I don't mind.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think alcohol is still open here. That's one
of the
have shelter.
You can't socialize at a bar. That's what my point.
Oh, I see what you mean.
There's going to be such debauchery.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you lock a kid in with cigars. You know these millennials who are homebodies, you know? By the time this is over, that's going to cure being a homebody. When you're forced to be a homebody without against your will, it's sort of like, I don't want to order food in anymore. It's fine when I was doing it on purpose. So anyways.
Man, I hope it's over soon. Like,
it's
I know
over until
it won't
May.
Be.
I mean, ignoring Donald Trump, the disease will be weakened by heat because it's a virus, and viruses do well in cold weather. I will say this, I am so glad it's not an airborne disease, or else we'd be in fucking trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just you have to be pretty close range to get in contact with it.
Well,
there are other diseases out there that can go well over 6 feet.
Yeah, it's called the flu.
Yeah.
It's called the regular flu. OG flu. At least I hope this teaches people not to eat wildlife.
I don't think it came from a bad.
It came from wildlife. It came from markets in which they would kill wildlife, put it in the market. Because what happens is that I'm not going to get into a science lesson right now. Let's just say that among wildlife, viruses mutate very fast, and it's we're not going to get into it. Anyways, let's go into the gaming flashback. Go ahead, TJ. All
right, our gaming flashback this week is Death Spank. Deathspank, also known as Deathspank Orphans of Justice, is a comedy action role-playing game created by game designers Ron Gilbert and Clayton Kozlarik. I think that's what I'm going with. It was developed by Hothead Games and published by Electronic Arts. The game was released on July 13th, 2010 on the PlayStation 3 via the PlayStation Network and on July 14th, 2010 on the Xbox 360 via Xbox Live Arcade. This, if I remember right, was one of the Summer of Arcade games.
Yep.
The Microsoft Windows and Mac OS X versions were released October 26, 2010, and December 14, 2010, respectively, via Steam.
Not exactly Summer Arcade there, though.
Yeah. Deathspank follows the titular character Deathspank on his quest to find an item known as the Artifact. The game was originally supposed to be the first of a two-part series, the second half being called the second half of the series entitled Deathspank Thongs of Virtue, was first released on September 20th, 2010. Gilbert described Deathspank as being Act 1 in the story and Thongs of Virtue being Acts 2 and 3. However, it was later announced that Deathspank was returning for a third game entitled The Bankening, abandoning the protagonist's name in its title. The third game was released on August 30th, 2011. Deathspank is an action role-playing game that also features elements of graphic adventure games. Combat gameplay is similar to Diablo. Players can acquire several pieces of armor and weaponry, each with different abilities and attributes. During combat, players can chain attacks into combos, which in turn deal more damage with each hit. You don't say. As more hits are gained on enemies, Deathspank's justice meter will fill. Once full, the player can unleash more powerful attacks for a limited time. In-game conversations with non-player characters were also a huge part of the game. Death's Bank features advanced dialogue options, similar to LucasArts' Monkey Island series, which played a large part in the unfolding of the game's story. These conversations may lead to quests for Death's Bank. In all, the game features 79 side quests in addition to the 33 quests required to advance the main plot. Once the game is completed, the player can return and complete any unfinished side quests. Death's Bank is designed to be playable in short segments and has 3 difficulty levels. It contains about 8 to 12 hours of gameplay, depending on the choices made by the player during the game. The world of Death's Bank is presented as a rotating cylinder, with the display having a rounded element similar to Animal Crossing Wild World. The world is a mixture of 2D and 3D props on 3D terrain, and is rendered without load screens as the player moves between areas. The game also features local cooperative mode, in which the second player takes the role of Sparkles the Wizard. Sparkles is equipped with multiple spells which provide support to Death's Bank, including a heal spell. Death's Bank received generally positive reviews from critics. At aggregate website Game Rankings, it holds a 79% to 80% for the platforms it was released on.
Now, it must be noted that Ron Gilbert did not work on The Baconing. So, for those who don't know Ron Gilbert, he was basically responsible for, Monkey Island 2, I believe. I don't think he worked on the first one. But he worked on Maniac Mansion and Ball Blazer. He also worked on Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, which I owned. Most recently, he's best known for doing Thimbleweed Park.
Yep.
Oh, that was a good game. I enjoyed that.
Yep. He also was responsible for the first two episodes of the Penny Arcade Adventures.
He also created the Scum engine, which is responsible for
the reason why it's called Scum is because the last two M's in Scum is Maniac Mansion.
Yep, script creation utility for Maniac Mansion.
Yep.
Which would be a major foundation for a lot of point and click games thereafter.
Kraken.
And Monkey Island.
Well, yeah, Zach McCracken. He also did a lot of the backyard games, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, Ron Gilbert, incredible. Like, there is. I didn't even know that he worked on Death's Bank, and I didn't know that Death's Bank. I thought Death's Bank was like basically an action RPG, just like a straight up brawl.
It was a comedic action RPG. Look at the name of the game, damn it!
Yeah, but like, I thought it was just like a straight up, very little like narrative to it, just like straight up comedic action RPG. But
you know what my favorite credit for Ron Gilbert is? He also did The Cave, which was a lot of people liked that game.
That was a good game.
But for Tales of Monkey Island, which is when Telltale Games did Monkey Island. His role was, quote-unquote, visiting professor of monkeyology. Which tells me he was there in an advisory role, but it's still funny.
Oh, very, very clever.
Yeah. I have Thimbleweed Park. I still have not played it.
I played that and completed it. It was a very interesting game, and it jumped the fourth wall at one point.
Yeah.
But as far as Death's Bank, I have not played that game, and I didn't really know about that game until today, reading about it, and I googled it to look at it, and it seems like a parody game. Like, you read the description, he has this artifact called the Artifact. It's,
that's his basic sense of humor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
By the way, he worked only as a programmer on Carnus Rift and Ball Blazer, both which I loved. That was when Lucasfilm Games was first starting. And Ball Blazer was basically a soccer game, but it had the smoothest animation you'd ever see on a C64.
He was also responsible for most of the Humongous Entertainment catalog, which includes Freddy Fish, Putt-Putt, Pajama Sam, and Spy Fox.
Yep, and Fatty Bear.
I loved Spy Fox when I was younger.
Yeah, well, a lot of his stuff, like the Big Thinkers stuff, Big Thinkers First Grade, Big Thinkers Kindergarten. He did a lot of educational software, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there was a lot riding on the cave, and it just didn't work out. I know that was his big game, and it just it got mediocre reviews, and just you know, I have not played Deathspank. I know Deathspank though, and it's you know, it was actually part of the Penny Arcade thing because Hothead Games was basically Penny Arcade, the two guys, you know, Gabe and Tycho.
Huh.
So, and when they went down, so did Deathspank and the Penny Arcade Adventures. Although, episode 3 and 4 of the Penny Arcade Adventures was done by the guy who did Cthulhu Saves the World, and done in the same style, which is slightly disappointing. I really enjoyed episodes 1 and 2. I would have liked to have seen the characters continue on. Unfortunately, your character is placed in a fridge. In episode 3 and 4, Rape Guy. That was your name. One of my favorite moments of episode 2 was that in the very beginning of the game, Gabe and Tycho come and tell you to join them, and you can just say, no, that's fine. And you get an achievement for refusing them a certain amount of times. They keep on coming back, are you sure? Yeah, I'm fine. You can go. So, yeah. But Deathspank is worth a play. I think it's still out there.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, it's on Steam, surely, still.
Yeah. I'm wondering if it's backwards compatible on the Xbox One. Yep. It's yeah, but you can play it on. Deathspank is available on Xbox One.
Nice.
So, that reminds me, it's a news item we don't have, and that is Sony is promising that most of their games, a good number of the PS4 games, will be compatible on the PlayStation 5. Which means it's probably software, like what Microsoft does. But what they're not saying is probably you're going to have to pay for it all over again.
Hmm. I mean, I don't get that. Like, it's more along the lines of just, like, they're not going to do...
I mean, if you own the disc, it's still... I don't know. I think
yeah, they're not... They're,
again.
I think if you own the disc, you can just put it in the PS5.
I'm not sure.
But it's absolutely not going to do with what Xbox is doing, which is if the game has a...
Well,
Xbox
if you release
One
the game,
X.
Yeah. Well, that's Xbox Anywhere. So what happens is that any game that's released on the Xbox One X, Series X, will be compatible with the Xbox One games. Compatibility. Yeah, it's any games that you own on the Xbox One will be playable and available for free on the Xbox Series X, which is one of the good things about having an online store. Although you know, if you have the disc too, that'll work as well.
Yeah, like I don't understand how PlayStation is not doing that because that is like the piece de resistance of what they're doing with Xbox is that you know that if you get a game that's going to be on the Xbox Series X, it'll automatically upgrade. You don't have to buy the game again. You
well,
don't have to worry
Microsoft
about which version of the game you have.
I think Microsoft's really, if you buy this Xbox Series X game, it'll work on your Xbox One, and when you finally decide to get an Xbox Series X, you'll be able to transfer everything. It'll be like you never left. You know, you'll have all your save games and all your, and the game will, you know, it'll be like you never left. You'll just have better graphics.
Yeah.
I'm hearing that Halo Infinity on the original launch Xbox One is going to look like shit because that's how advanced the Slipspace engine is, that it's going to require the Xbox Series X.
I can see that. I get the feeling it's going to be the same with Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah, but here's the funny thing. Cyberpunk 2077 is going to be on the friggin' Switch, and they're going to use the same streaming thing that they did with, I think it was Doom? The Doom 2016 or some, one of the games that was would never be able to run on the Switch, but you can stream on the Switch. I forgot which one. So you'll have Cyberpunk 2077 on the Switch if you want it.
If it's by the folks that did the Doom port, then it's in good hands. If it's by the folks that did the Witcher 3 port, it's in bad hands.
I don't think it was the Witcher 3. I think it was Doom. By the way, I also Xbox, Microsoft had their GDC talk streamed. Very dry stuff because it's directly to consumers and all that stuff, right? But they actually revealed the Xbox Series X, what's it called, inner workings and released complete specs and also allowed people to, you know, how the Xbox Series X can be put together. And now we know why it's in that funky tower shape, although you can put it on its side. And it's really neat. So you have this metal divider, and on one side is one motherboard, and the other side is another motherboard. And they're clamped together, but they're not touching. And you have this gigantic fan on the top of the Xbox Series X. So all that air is going right through up the top. And also the sides. They're not stupid enough to have only one exit. And that green glow you see, that's not light. That's actually the effect that'll always be there, whether the Xbox One Series X is on or off.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Microsoft also showed put an Xbox Series X next to an actual refrigerator. For size comparison.
I do like the way that they're handling that so far. I'm still a little concerned. Like, I'm still way concerned about what's going on with PlayStation 5. The one thing that I did like about what I've seen from the PlayStation 5 presentations, and especially the one at GDC, is that they're talking that it will be, like, the storage on the PS5 will be upgradable and pretty easily.
They're
so
doing that on the Xbox Series X, too. They showed the slot on the side where you can stick what's it called?
It's an M2 SSD.
Yeah. So both manufacturers are saying, yeah, this is something that people are going to want.
Which, that is kind of a game changer, because M2s are super strong.
People are concerned that they didn't see an optical sound, you know, port for the Xbox Series X. That's probably something that can be patched in, but here's the thing. You no longer need it because of HDMI protocols, but there's a lot of people who prefer having I have an optical sound, and the reason why they prefer it is that there's no interference from outside things, because it's light. It's not electrical impulses. So you don't have to worry about, you know, having wires near it, because it's not going to affect it. If there's enough of an outcry, I'm pretty sure that they'll just include the port, just because. I don't think it's that big a deal.
Yeah. Still, I would say that Xbox and Microsoft are ahead on the way they're presenting this stuff so far. I think they're doing a great job.
$500, which is the same price as an Xbox One, but the main difference here is that the PS5 is going to cost a lot more. We already discussed this like a few weeks ago.
Yeah. I just feel like Microsoft has been far more forthcoming with their information. I feel like they're playing this more there's like not even any doubt about it. They are playing it more consumer friendly compared to PlayStation. They are.
Game Pass is making them a fuck ton of money. That's why.
Yeah.
So they can afford to do that.
I wish PlayStation was playing more consumer friendly. I really
do. Here's
the
problem, though. Sony got caught by surprise with having cloud service. I think that's the biggest thing that they got caught flat-footed on, was not having cloud service. And they're actually renting out cloud service from Microsoft. And a lot of people don't understand what the xCloud is going to do. They're going to find out what it can really do. Like, the xCloud is going to make things a lot easier if you own a Microsoft console.
Yeah. That's one of the biggest parts about it, is that, like, the transition seems like it's going to be super easy. Like, people can either wait or they can move on. But either way, the systems that Microsoft is putting in place seem like they're going to facilitate that transfer to be pretty much buttery smooth.
Yeah, they're telling Google, watch, you're doing Studio, let's show you how it's actually done. I lost my place here, because there was something that was concerning me. So we'll see. Microsoft announced that the pandemic is they're back on track, and the Xbox Series X is going to be on time. I haven't heard from Sony. I'm pretty sure that they're going to say the same thing. So yeah, they'll actually have their stuff out. The only thing I'm wondering about is what Nintendo's going to do, and Nintendo seems to like to do things a year later. So I'm willing to bet you that news of a Switch 2 will be the following year.
It's interesting, because now that Animal Crossing is out, like, the only other thing I can think of that is like a big Nintendo game would be the sequel to Breath of the Wild. And they're like, I don't know. I don't know. Scott, are there any other first party Nintendo games that they've talked about?
Let's see. I guess just Animal Crossing.
No, I mean like upcoming. The only one I can think of is Breath of the Wild 2.
Yeah, for first party games.
Well, I mean, like 2 months ago, they were talking about there will be a surprise major franchise game this holiday season.
Is Dark Crystal?
Breath of the Wild 2 is supposed to be coming out in 2021.
Okay, so when we say first party, we mean made directly at Nintendo. Because yes. I don't know if Dark Crystal Tactics was made at Nintendo. I think somebody else is making it, but it's only on the Nintendo Switch.
They're saying that Nintendo is coming out with a new 2D Metroid.
I've heard rumors of that.
So I've been here, like, people have been talking about this a lot, like, when's the Nintendo Direct? They're going to have one. They have to have one any day now because, like, besides Breath of the Wild, there are no other first party.
Well, there's supposed to be something coming out this holiday, so, and it's supposed to be a major franchise.
Yeah, but that's still like kind of up in the air. It's out in the clouds. Nobody knows what it is.
I mean, it could be Pikmin 4. It could be a new Star Fox. It could be an F-Zero.
Would love a Kid Icarus. You know,
I would like.
Kid Icarus is dead. Dead. They took his corpse and stomped it. You'll never see Pit again, except in Super Smash Bros.
Kid Icarus is dope, and I would love to see them remaster Uprising.
Yeah, low on their priorities, though. I doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Pikmin 4, I don't know. It's not a major franchise.
But Metroid is, so I can see.
No, but you see, they have a 2D Metroid coming. I don't know if they're going to have a 3D Metroid coming. But I'll say this, you know, Nintendo desperately needs a good, rail shooter, and Star Fox would really hit the spot. I mean, I know a lot of people would like to see Star Fox come back.
You're the only person I've ever heard say, we need a rail shooter. Every time I hear a rail shooter, it's usually with a negative connotation.
What was the rail shooter that was on the Nintendo that was an adaptation? I think it was it Dead Rising? No. Dead Space. Yeah, the Dead Space. I forgot the second title, but there was a Dead Space rail shooter that was actually the best game on the Wii.
Yeah. I feel like it.
And hey,
two franchises
fucking awesome. So don't even at me at that.
Typing of the Dead is great. The entire House of the Dead series is quite good.
Yeah, but I prefer Typing of the Dead.
I feel like the two franchises that people would lose their mind over the most is Metroid, for sure, but also if they for some reason brought back finally took the character they've been using in Smash Bros. For literally years without giving him a game. If they went and made another F-Zero, I think people would lose their minds.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome, actually.
Everybody loves Captain Falcon. And, like,
they need the 2D Metroid to get the bad taste of Other M out of people's mouths.
Well, I mean, they already kind of did. They actually...
Oh, Federation Force? No!
No, not Federation Force.
Samus Returns was real good on the 3DS. I thought that did well.
Yeah, but we're talking about a Switch game, though.
Yeah, but here's what they need to do. If they're gonna move up to another Metroid altogether, they should port Samus Returns remake over to the Switch.
They need an original new game, and that's what they're talking about for 2020.
If they ported Samus Returns over to the Switch in preparation for a new Metroid game, I think that would also be awesome.
I think it's gonna be F-Zero, and
I've talked to a few people about this. I think what happens next, if you do that, based on how many people loved Samus Returns, the remake, you remake Super Nintendo's Super Metroid. You give it the Samus Returns treatment, and everybody would love that.
Isn't that on the Nintendo and SNES Virtual Console?
It is, but like so is the original Metroid, and you still have Samus Returns on. I think it's been enough time, and yet Super Metroid still has enough of a following. I mean, it started the speedrunning.
Here's the thing, though. People have started last year. People had a petition to bring F-Zero to the Nintendo Switch. So think about the timing there. 2019, yeah. People are making the demand. Maybe Nintendo says, okay, and a year later, or 18 months later, boom.
The other thing people are guessing is Metroid Prime 4, because there's been like rumors going around for a long time that Metroid Prime 4 is
coming. Announced.
I think it was, but it's never been given a date, and we don't have any idea what it looks like.
I mean, here's the thing. They already announced it, so if that was the 2020 main thing coming out, this you'd think, oh, it's Metroid Prime 4. I don't know. It's not going to be Catalyst, that's for damn sure.
We need a Nintendo Direct real bad. Because, like, I don't have anything to look forward to. There's nothing to look forward to now that Animal Crossing is out. Everything is mysterious.
Oh, really? Well, let's talk about the next item. Because I think that'll answer what's to look forward to. So our next news item is Resident Evil 3 Remake brings back Unbreakable Knives. And this comes from PC Gamer. Resident Evil 2 Remake zombies are tough customers with their thick skulls able to soak up a clip and their skin akin able to break a knife. Thankfully, knife science has come a long way since 2019, and Resident Evil 3 Remake's knives are going to be made of hardier stuff. The original games didn't have this problem, but for the remake, Capcom decided to make them defensive weapons, used to stop Claire or Leon or Claire from becoming zombie chow. They can still be kind of used defensively, but they're just there for emergencies. For Resident Evil 3, Capcom changed it again, telling Game Informer that the knife is returning to its status as an indestructible backup weapon that, in the right hands, can be used as your sole weapon. It probably won't be for the faint of heart, but knife-only runs will be possible. According to producer Steve Fabiano, we kept the knife inexhaustible in Resident Evil 3, so you can use it forever. We're dealing with survival horror, and everything's exhaustible. You run out of bullets, you run out of herbs, you run out of all the items you can use, so if you did run out of everything, what else do you have? The knife. The director always wanted to make it so that you could at least have your trusty knife. There's always something you rely on. Resident Evil 3 Remake's demo is available right now on Steam, so you can play through part of the early section ahead of the April 3 launch. And I'll tell you something, that annoyed the fuck out of me in Resident Evil 2 Remake. The breaking knife. Because I already was running out of bullets. Had I had the knife and knew it wasn't going to break, screw you shooting the zombies, I'm just going to sneak up against them and hack them in the head.
The knife is also the most powerful weapon per, like, damage per second in Resident Evil 2. There's a knife glitch in Resident Evil 2 where people, like, literally complete the game with just knives.
And I think that might have been why the knife could break in Resident Evil 2. If that's the truth, they should have a patch for Resident Evil 2, patching in invincible knives.
But this is good. This is really good, because, like, at first, I was like, I liked the idea of having break, like, the knives were a lifesaver. The knives and the grenades were, like, life-saving items that you could use to just, like, get out of a real tight spot. But knife-only runs in Resident Evil games have been around since the first one, and they are a thing of beauty. Like, when speedrunners get their hands on this game and they start doing knife-only runs, man, that's going to be a dance to watch. One of the other things that Resident Evil 3 has over Resident Evil 2 or the other ones is that it's not as tight in the corridors. You're on the streets of the city and it's more wide open, and they reciprocate by putting more monsters in there from what I've seen, but you have more room to maneuver and move around, and Jill has a dodge tactic, which is really nice. I really like what they're doing with this. Like, I really am happy that they brought back the unbreakable knife. I'm happy with the way the dodge mechanic works. It's going to be such a good game.
Anyways, let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. I just wanted to quickly say there's three games coming out next month that I think a lot of people are looking forward to. Final Fantasy VII Remake, Trials of Mana, and the Minecraft Dungeons. So there's stuff to look forward to. But the next news item is Cities Skyline Finishing Themed Sunset Harbor expansion is out next week. This is from Eurogamer. Acclaimed city builder Cities Skylines is poised to float purposely into damp new era next Thursday, 26th of March, with the arrival of its maritime and transportation-focused Sunset Harbor expansion, releasing simultaneously on consoles and PC. Sunset Harbor is casting its thematic net-wide compared to some of Cities Skylines' earlier expansions, introducing commercial fishing bringing the likes of fishing boats, fish farms, and four new industrial policies, plus a whole range of new public transport options. On the latter front, there's the newly intercity bus service, enabling population to travel between cities via the highway, and there's the eco-friendly trolley bus service, drawing electrical power from overhead wires and using those tired of roads. Sunset Harbor introduces a new passenger helicopter service, recreational flying courtesy of Aviation Club, which adds the attractiveness and entertainment to the city. So what, no ferries? Sunset Harbor also brings a new above-ground metro line option, transport hubs connecting different public transportation networks, expanded healthcare facilities, water treatment plants, and can process wastewater to reuse for reuse. A new transfer facilities option for waste management, plus five new maps, including boreal, tropical, and temperate locales. City Skylines Sunset Harbor expansion will be available for PC, Xbox One, and PlayStation 4 when it launches on Thursday, 26th of March.
Which is probably when this episode is going to be released. One thing is that City Skylines is coming off Game Pass after this month, but I think I own it for the Xbox One. But, you know, I like... Here's the thing. I like City Skylines, but I think I'm more of a Cities in Motion kind of guy, and I hope they make Cities in Motion 3. Because that does all... That's only about the public transportation.
The last time I played City Skylines was... I think... Back when it didn't have any expansions at the time. No, wait. Yes, it did. It had the night mode added, the one that allowed you to do night attractions and stuff. And all of my town was complaining a little too much for my liking. Ooh. So in a fit of pettiness, I destroyed the waste treatment plant and the town flooded with sewage.
Oh, yeah. They were complaining on the Twitter thing?
Yes. Okay. I forget what they were complaining about, but I had enough of them, and so I basically removed sewage disposal.
At least in SimCity, you could actually summon Godzilla or a UFO.
That's true. I always enjoyed doing that, just loading up a city and destroying it with earthquakes and airplane crashes and aliens. Entertaining to watch destruction.
Flooding the town with poop is not quite Godzilla tier, but it is pretty bad.
That's creative. Very creative.
You have to upload that to YouTube. Did you see the YouTube video I posted from State of Decay 2? Juggernaut Edition?
Oh, I didn't see that.
So, you have to see it. let's just say that cars in State of Decay 2... weigh like 5 pounds, it seems. Because I'm getting in the car, I sideswipe a zombie, and suddenly I'm launched into space. Seriously, launch into space. It is just... I could not believe it. And, you know, here's the thing. I've had lesser versions of that happen to me. But this, it was just bizarre. I'm going to give you the link right now, and I'm going to put the link in the episode, the episode notes, because you just watch this, and you're going to go, what the hell? You can do it while I'm reading the, the new, next news item. But, yeah, I mean, the only thing I don't like about City Skylines is that it isn't... Sometimes things happen, and I can't prevent it like I can in SimCity. Like, suddenly people start dying all over the place, and it's like, oh, you have to have your graveyard, but that doesn't help, you know, because people are living with their dead bodies.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of, there was a lot of things at the beginning that, and I'm sure there's still bugs out there, in there now that, like, they just, like, once certain bugs happen, they're so incompatible with each other that it can just straight up wreck a game. And I'm not saying that City Skylines is a broken game, because when I played it, I had a good time with it. I'm just saying that, like, when there were bugs, like...
It isn't broken. I mean, it isn't the bugs that bother me. It's just the feedback is a lot different than SimCity, you know.
Uh-huh.
Although when you have your city starting up, then it's just a matter of looking at the green lines and the yellow blue lines, you know. Oh, people want to come in, gotta build those things, you know. And you have to really do the loans really well. I mean, you can't even get a good city without doing a loan. No matter how good you think you are, you'll need a loan.
Yes. City Skyline, like, both. There's so many numbers at work in City Skylines that it's very fun, but it's also very difficult to manage once you get to the later stages.
I just wish Bus Simulator wasn't so buggy.
Yeah.
Bus Simulator was my thing. You build your own routes. You get to drive through the city, pick up passengers, and catch people who are trying to jump fares, and that I like it more on that level, you know, closer to the thing. Not so close like The Sims, but, you know, just running the public transportation is fun. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead and watch the video as I read this. It's only 28 seconds. Animal Crossing New Horizons is getting review bombed. And this comes from some Game Rant. Animal Crossing New Horizons is launched at critical acclaim, holding a 91 review average on Metacritic, and is standing as the highest-rated game of the year to date. However, its user score tells a very different, much different story at 6.5 out of 10, as some players have started to review bomb Animal Crossing New Horizons. For the uninitiated, Animal Crossing New Horizons only allows one island per Switch. Other players using the same Switch can still create their own character, but they'll be constantly competing with their fellow players over the island's limited resources. Local co-op also doesn't allow for any Switch split-screen options, so when two people play Animal Crossing New Horizons at the same time on the same Switch, they're stuck close to each other. To make matters worse, the only person who founded the island can make any significant progress, so other players have to wait for them to continue the game to have access to the more features and areas in the island. Some of the negative reviews on Metacritic, of which there are currently 258 and growing, are from parents who bought the game for their kids and how only having one island has caused some headaches. Yeah, I'll bet. When Bobby and Judy are fighting over the game, you know, and there's only one main character that can advance the game. Basically, the only way for Animal Crossing New Horizons players in the same household can have their own island and a proper experience with the game is by owning multiple Switch consoles. It's an unfortunate situation for those who purchase a Nintendo Switch for the family to share instead of giving everyone in the house their own individual console, and sadly it's not something that's likely to be changed in a patch or future updates. While it seems unlikely that Nintendo will change Animal Crossing New Horizons' one island limit, perhaps the company will keep these complaints in mind for the next game in the series, whatever that may be. This is baffling to me.
I don't think they're going to ever change this. I think that this has always been their intention from when they very first started New Horizons. Because, I mean, if I was a little kid and I knowing my own history with my mom, she would not have bought me and my sister both a DS and two cartridges. We would have had one and we would have had to learn to share. I mean, I think that's kind of the point of the game is to learn to share. I mean, they
well,
even have a character in the game.
You have to buy
game.
Two cartridges in this case. You right. have to buy two Switches.
Well, with New Leaf, I'm sorry, you would have to buy two cartridges.
Yeah, and I mean, what the baffling part to me is why is there a limitation in the game that keeps you from making your own island? I don't understand why saves don't separate islands, why every villager has to work from the same island, same resources on the game. I covered this story when the detail was first dropped, and that was like, it's got to be like a month and a half now since I first saw that and wrote about it. And like, I feel bad for the people that are just discovering that now, but at the same time, like, it's such, and like,
here's the thing, I don't mind review bombing for this because I fucking gave NBA 2K20 a massively negative review. I care if the review bombing comes from stupid people like, oh well, it's SJW game because there's a protagonist and a female. No, there's a legitimate gripe, you know, that completely ruins
yeah.
the game for some people.
I can understand docking points because of this, but zero
if you have two kids fighting in the household as a parent.
Well, then there's your first problem right there, is they need to learn to share, because
no,
I'm sharing.
No, it's not a matter of sharing. It's that my, one person. It's not sharing, though.
It's it also
is sharing, because all, I can, yeah, I have to trigger certain, because I'm the account holder on mine, so I have to trigger certain quests, but, like, they can still partake.
You're the adult. Now try and explain that to two 12-year-olds.
Of course, two 12-year-olds don't care.
And the issue with that is that, like, you can impassively fuck over other people that are playing on the same device.
Right.
Like I've been hearing stories of people, like picking all the fruit on the island, and so when the other person comes home to play, there's no fruit for them. And I have one of the funnier stories I heard was somebody got upset with their dad, and so they built an impenetrable wall of trash between and the island that kept their dad from reaching the museum or any of the fruit trees.
Well, at least
so it's like,
at least they didn't close down the waste production facility and had the streets running with poo. Now, did they?
There's actually an island. Like in New Leaf, you have this island that you can go to, and you could just collect all the resources you want, and the game just randomly generates a new island each time you go to this island. So, I mean, you don't have to fight over the resources if you just get the miles to go to the getaway island.
So, yeah, but if somebody cuts you off from the museum, you're kind of screwed, aren't you?
Yeah, let's
you can pick up the stuff.
Let's cut off the entire thing about, you know, what people... The real question is, why would Nintendo do this? Why would they?
Yeah,
why would they only?
There are other
what
games.
What is the goal there?
There are other games that that would profile. Doesn't Breath of the Wild I believe have its own profile save, so whoever's playing it has their own saves to
yeah,
it.
I'm just wondering about this particular thing. I mean, it can't be to force people to buy another Switch. Can it? I don't think that's the goal, but that's the only goal I can see.
And I mean, like, Breath of the Wild still has the three save method where you can pick one of the three spots and go in there. Like, why isn't that a new Animal Crossing? Why can't you have three save slots with each different islands?
I mean, it can't be because of memory.
Three. You remember.
It's just
yeah. Like Breath of the Wild definitely has the three save slot system.
Here's the thing, okay, if you're gonna play Animal Crossing New Horizons, just make sure you're the only player who counts.
Or just make sure that you're coordinating with the other person that you're playing with so you don't
yes.
screw them over on
the
accident.
The problem is that you have to coordinate with them, and sometimes...
And that is the issue, isn't it? Because you can screw someone over by complete accident. And, like, why? That is a unique problem that Animal Crossing New Horizons created for itself. And I'm not. Animal Crossing is a good game. It's got a lot of good things. It's got a lot of good things going on.
It doesn't deserve a zero.
It does
it
not.
It does if you can't play the game or you don't. Or it's
you can play the game, Jonah. That's my point that I was trying to say.
But that's,
is that I was
that's
playing
someone...
it with my wife and my daughter. I got Blathers to come to the island, and I let my daughter finish giving him stuff so he would build. The next day, she finished it, and I'm the account holder. I got, you know, I got the stores to open, and my wife got to have the first.
Then why do you care about a review score? Why do you care about a user review score if they review bomb it, if you're enjoying it? That should have no effect on your enjoying of a game.
Because I know how other people view reviews. I know how game companies.
They see the critical review. And here's a little thing. You can read why. You know, when I'm looking for something on Amazon, and the previous person who hosted this podcast, you know, had the idea, and I said, that's a good idea. When I look at something on Amazon, I look at all the one-star reviews to see why people gave it a one-star review. And that's what you do with these low reviews. You see why they're doing it. If they're giving the bullshit reason, if they're giving a bullshit reason, then you can just ignore it. But if they're giving legit reasons, like you only have one island, and, you know, you better if you have more than one people playing it, you're going to have to share and you're not going to, you know, and all that stuff, you know, then it'll give you, well, maybe I shouldn't buy it.
Giving it a zero because of the one island thing, though, is a bit much.
It doesn't entirely destroy. It's how you feel. It's a subjective. Don't tell other people.
It's like throwing out everything else good about the game
because of this one little thing.
That
problem threw out everything good about the game for them. They're not enjoying it. they don't want to play it because of this problem, you know, or parents are having to deal with loud kids because of this problem. That's the way it is. And if you don't like it, well, then, you know, I don't mind zero score reviews so long as they're for the right, you know, for good reasons, not because of bullshit reasons. This is a good reason for someone to say, I don't want this game. You shouldn't buy this because of this. You know, that's their score. And a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people who gave the game 10, even if it, because people are very binary. It's either a zero game or a 10 game.
The thing is, I've sometimes listened to low reviews that, oh, well, maybe this game is bad. Then I get the game and I'm like, oh my god, I love this game. That they don't know what they're talking about.
Who are you reviewing? User reviews?
Yeah, I'm talking about user reviews.
Yeah, well, why would you? Well, you have to read the reviews.
I read them. And then
they have reasons that, you know,
I get the game and their reasons just seemed small and petty and just like they didn't know what they were talking
about. The days before user reviews and just say about critical reviews, okay? There were some games which got, you know, 6 or 6.5, you know, aggregate. But I knew it was my genre, and reading the reviews, I said, well, things that they have a problem with don't bother me. And I loved those games. You know? You have to read the review, you know, and some people just don't give a number score for their review, so you actually are forced to read it.
I think it's fair to be of the mind that having one island for an entire system is a bad idea, and also the game doesn't deserve a zero.
NBA 2K20 is one out of you can't give zero in the Xbox.
You hated the whole game though, Jonah.
The distortions created by a virtual currency for a My Career game, which is a totally offline mode, distorted the game and just ruined the entire game for me. Also, the franchise mode sucked too.
But the one island thing isn't enough to ruin the entire Animal Crossing game.
It doesn't. The game with someone else.
It doesn't infect every part of the game.
There are certain ways that
people play games.
It doesn't
ruin it for me, and I am sharing it with two other people.
There are people who love Madden, even if the game sucks, because they love the Ultimate Team mode. So they give it a 10 for that, even though the game sucks, and they never play offline.
But virtual currency in your situation permeates every part of NBA 2K.
There are some people who love NBA 2K because they don't care about the virtual currency.
But for your situation in particular, it permeates every part of the game. It permeates every part of your enjoyment of the game.
For Animal Crossing for a lot of people. Is there a way of telling Nintendo, we don't like this, stop it, change it?
But it doesn't.
I don't want them to change it. I like the shared experience.
Here's the thing. All those people giving it a zero review will get noticed. Here's the thing with me. I was looking. I did a YouTube search for NBA 2K20 bad. So I got a lot of videos. And a lot of these guys complaining made me want to sock them in the nose. This one guy said, well, you know, this game sucks, you know. And the next game is probably going to suck. I'm going to have to buy it because I have to do reviews. And my attitude is, fuck you. Fuck you. If you don't like the game, don't fucking buy it. Don't buy the next one. You know? Because you're ruining it. Because here's the thing. They don't give a shit about your one-star, zero-star reviews. You know what they look at? They look at sales. And if you keep buying the game, they're not going to change. They don't give a shit. So,
Animal Crossing sold one.
I mean, Animal Crossing, I think, was one of the best sellers this past month. Especially given the situation we're in right now.
Yeah.
Even if Animal Crossing was a terrible game and it was receiving 3 out of 10 critical reviews, the number of them bought, Nintendo's going to say, well, people really like this game despite the negative reviews.
Yeah. Well, I stand by what I said. It's like one island is a bad idea, and also it's not a zero.
Well, that's your opinion.
I mean, it is my opinion, but it's also
it's millions of other people's opinions,
too.
And you're saying other people's opinions are wrong?
No, I'm saying the millions of other people who agree with me are right.
I still don't see why you'd be so friggin' offended by user scores. I couldn't give two shits about user scores if I enjoy a game. Because the game, my tastes are different than other people's tastes, period. Not everybody is the same. Not everybody thinks the same. There, if let's say there were three, you know, three islands, I'm willing to bet you there would be a lot of low zero score reviews from people who didn't like some other aspect of the game because that's what they care about. That's the thing. There are things that people care about that you may don't care about.
People who gave it a zero because of the island thing are wrong and they should feel bad about it.
I gave State of Decay a 3-star review because even though I don't like a lot of the aspects of the game, I still keep playing it. So there's something there. I just told you know, if they don't improve it, then I'm not going to buy State of Decay 4.
Right. And I mean, like, I guess what I'm getting at is ultimately, yeah, you have to share resources, but once you realize that, you just like, we just have to deal with this.
Here's the other thing, though, that you're
missing. There's like I guess we just have to deal with this 1% of the game that kind of sucks, and then move on to the other 99% that is pretty good.
If people are wondering about the difference between the review score and the user score, they're going to look at the user scores and read the 0-star reviews. And here's the thing. Some people may say, you know what? I don't want that either, so I'm not going to buy it now. So they save themselves $40 or $50 or how much it costs
60.
On a game that they weren't gonna enjoy.
This situation is like if you went through a 5-course meal, a delicious soup, a wonderful salad, a nice juicy steak, with a very nice alcoholic drink, and then you got to the dessert and there was like a pineapple piece on top of it, and it just pissed you off, and you're like, this meal is fucking ruined.
No, that's not the right analogy. Here's the thing. It's like a dinner. It's like a dinner in which you had a wonderful steak and wonderful sides, and then you tried the dessert and it made you throw up all over your friends.
No.
And it made you throw up all over your friends. You're not going to give that dinner a good review, no matter what it tasted like before that incident.
Not at all, because it's literally like, you just like, oh man, there's a piece of pineapple on the dessert.
It's more like you got salmonella from the wonderful chicken you just ate.
Nope, I'm standing by what I said. It's literally like
throw up and give you the shits afterwards.
Nope,
yeah, you're
not at all.
Give that meal a positive review.
It is not like that at all. It is literally like, that pineapple.
Hold on, Jonah.
No, it is literally like, ah, man, that piece of pineapple kind of sucks. Oh, well, I guess I'll just enjoy the rest of the 99% of this food that was good.
No, for these people, they made them throw up because it gave them food poisoning.
No, it's like
they didn't like it and they're not playing it because they don't want to get food poisoning.
I gotta get fucking food. It's not a good analogy.
It is a good analogy.
Okay, because the game. First of all, the game works.
It tasted great, but it put a bad taste in people's mouths and made
them game works. You're allowed to help the account holder complete quests. You might not
That's
be able
fine.
To
the
take
people don't agree.
Some of
and
them.
Here's the thing: they don't like it. They're showing their discontent.
And I'm trying to show how you can still be involved on the island.
Yeah,
people are acting like they can't
like,
do anything,
care,
and that's
they
not
like
true.
That aspect. You
it is
it's
dated.
Like,
It's
like you trying to explain a joke to someone who doesn't find it funny.
Yeah.
They're not going to find it any funnier because you explained it to them.
Sure, but at the same time, your analogy is wrong.
It doesn't deserve
if you
zero.
Say so. Everybody listening to this, tell people who's right. Or the people who are wrong.
I'm just saying that the other 95% of the meal is good, but the piece of pineapple makes you hate the rest of it? Why?
If 95% of the meal was perfect and the last 5% killed you, was that a good meal?
It didn't kill. It's not a good analogy.
People throw up.
You're acting like the Switch blew up or something. You're acting like it gave them viruses.
You can play it all you like.
The game
you're
works.
These
it's playable. It's fun.
It doesn't make the rest of the game not fun.
It's not fun for them, though.
The rest
they're
of the game doesn't
fun.
Stop
you can't
existing.
Tell people have fun when they're not having fun.
My wife is having fun. My daughter's having fun.
That's fine. But they're not having fun.
But even then, that one thing doesn't make the other things stop being fun.
It does for them.
No, it doesn't.
I've had entire games ruined. Remember when I was talking about Void Bastards? I loved that game until I got to the end, and it was just like, oh, that sucks. And it made me instantly not like everything, and I haven't played it since. That ending soured me on the entire game so much that I'm hoping when they come out with Void Bastards 2 that they fix whatever, you know, what I don't like. By the way, I did not know this, but I should have figured it out. The people who did Void Bastards also did System Shock, and it shows. It's a humorous version of System Shock, but it's still System Shock.
But you still enjoyed a grand portion of Void Bastards.
Until that ending, then everything soured in my mouth, and I haven't played it since.
But you would play another one.
And I gave it a 2-star review.
Hmm.
Because I said, you know, I loved it until the very end, and then it just kneed me in the balls and slapped me in the face and called me a loser. I can't recommend Void Bastards. I can't.
Really?
I can't. I want to, but it's like, I think of the ending, and it's like, I don't want to, don't waste your time.
See, I mean, like, to me, a fair review is giving this, like, maybe a 7,
reminds
because
me,
it
reminds me of The Mist. I loved 95% of The Mist, then they had that bullshit scene that wasn't in the book or in the short story, just because they wanted to slap the audience in the face.
Which part?
The ending. I'm not going to talk, I'm not going to spoil it.
Wait, the movie
the
adaptation
Mist, the movie
of Stephen
Mist,
King's
yeah.
The Mist?
What's interesting is that during the movie, I could see, yeah, I can see why Half-Life was inspired by The Mist. Because if these guys ever did a Half-Life game, that's what I want it to look like. That's what I want Half-Life to look like, if it was ever a movie. The way, what they did with The Mist.
I'm trying to think if there's anything where just like one small aspect of the game ruined everything.
I'm pretty sure there has been. I mean, you know.
In any case, like I feel like the sensible, reasonable response to that is you're like, okay, this part sucks, but the rest of this is good, so like I guess we'll just move on.
They give it a 0 review, deal with it. It's not your review. You know what you could do? You could write your own user review, give it a 10, and talk about how everybody else is an idiot and how you're right.
That's basically what I'm doing right here on this podcast.
No, but you see, yeah. That's not going to raise it up to 6.6. Like I said, here's the thing. Reviews should never, never make you change your mind about something that you like, unless in the back of your mind there was something bothering you, and, you know, and you just wanted to pretend you were enjoying having a good time, and really you were just trying to make excuses for it. I'm not saying that about Animal Crossing, but I can remember, the initial things that people had about The Phantom Menace. It's like people said, yeah, it was awesome, it was great.
It's so ridiculous how all or nothing everybody is on things.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't have to be all or nothing.
What? That's the way life is. It's not fair, and that's
no, all or nothing.
People giving Animal Crossing a 0 out of 10 should not ruin your enjoyment of Animal Crossing.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes.
Okay,
Sith,
so long as they don't go hunting down the makers of the game and telling them they made a shitty game.
You see, that's the thing. I don't.
I mean, I don't know if they're doing that or not.
Developers of the game. I don't even know who the developers are.
I would love to ask them why they did the One Island thing. I really would. And I hope they,
I know what the answer is going to be. Nintendo told us to.
Like, it is a perplexing decision. It is.
Yeah, here's the thing. You know, if you know you're going to be the only player of the game, then, you know, you don't have to worry about that.
It's just not a game-breaking one, I guess. Like, that's the part that bothers me.
I refuse to believe Nintendo did it so that you'd be forced to buy another Switch. That's the one thing I refuse to believe. Even though that's the only reason it could be for that. Unless, and this is the other unless, Scott, you're playing. How advanced does it feel in terms of depth?
It does feel more advanced because
it
can...
It feels like a really, really deep game, right? So
yeah,
I'm wondering if they had a choice. Either have this depth or just have one island, you know, have this depth in one island or have multiple islands.
System limitations?
Yeah, I think it might have been. It could have been system limitations. We don't know.
I mean, it already has a small hard drive to begin with.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's the case. I think it's more a what's it called, RAM sort of thing. You know. Here's the thing. If the Switch 2 comes out and they release this game for that, and all of a sudden you can have multiple saves, then you either know A, Nintendo changed it because people were angry, or two, they were finally able to implement that feature.
Yeah.
We don't know. It's either that or Nintendo wants you to buy more than one Switch. And I don't want to think of that reason. I don't think any console here's the thing though. The Switch isn't the most isn't the most expensive thing in the world, and it's also not exactly the biggest, shelf space hog there is either. I know, because there's so many families that have multiple 3DSs, you know, multiple handhelds.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. I mean, if this is the case, say, for the 3DS, then I could say, yeah, you know, there were just not enough room, and they would have to do this for that. I mean, it actually did happen. When I bought a previously owned version of one of them. I don't know if it was Animal Crossing. It could have been, actually. There was someone else's thing, and I had to restart the entire thing all over again. I had to reset the entire game.
Actually,
I think it was even worse. I think the world that it was created was stuck there for, I don't know. I just remember that someone else was in there first, and I either had to reset the entire game, or I had to live in their world. I don't know. Although I will say, I didn't have people coming up to me angry because I neglected it for weeks. You haven't tried that, have you? Abandoning the game for a bit and coming back and seeing how
the city is playing it right now. But
the apocalypse.
I have done that with New Leaf, where I hadn't played it in months, and there's weeds everywhere, and people are like, "Where have you been?"
Actually, yeah. I heard that in this game, they're even unhappier. But the thing is that they did take out the clock cheat, so you can no longer do that.
Huh.
Which is good. I mean, that's fine. I mean, it was always a cheap cheat in the Animal Crossing games, where you set the clock to, say, December 25th so you could get the Christmas stuff, and then set it back again. So, yeah, I mean, that cheat is out now, so you're just going to have to wait until June for your whale shark.
Yep. And all the other stuff.
Let us know what you think.
Good lord, that was contentious.
For those five or six people who are listening to this podcast, let us know what you think about this situation. About if there's a right time to review bomb something. Because I see the 1.5 stars on Xbox Live for NBA 2K20 and it puts a smile on my face. Then it makes me frown because you assholes. I have never purchased an NBA 2K game since NBA 2K14. Whether it's a review copy or Gamefly, I have not paid a penny for it. You guys keep on complaining and buying the next one. What do you think's going to happen?
Yeah. Animal Crossing sold 1.88 million units in Japan alone.
That's what I'm saying.
No, yeah.
No. The thing is that they found the right time to release this game. Everybody's forced to be indoors, and it's a new game. By the way, thank God for digital games.
Yeah, because physical copies are like basically not shipping right now.
No, mm-hmm. And also you don't have to go out and buy a new game.
Mm-hmm.
And GameStop wanted to keep their stores open as vital services.
That's just unbelievable. Reggie Fils-Aimé is heading that now.
He is not in control of that decision. He actually doesn't. He is not officially a part. And actually, he's not like
he's a spokesperson. That's all.
He's an advisory member on their board.
Oh, okay.
And he starts on April 20th.
Here's the thing, though. GameStop had a golden opportunity to take advantage of the digital space. I mean, they do sell digital cards. But had they recognized what digital meant early on, like a few years before it became, you know, when Valve first started, that should have been when GameStop realized where things were headed.
Mm-hmm.
And started opening up their own online store, you know, to compete with Valve. I mean, there's other digital stores like Gamers Gate and GOG and all that stuff.
Yeah.
If GameStop gotten in on the ground floor, they'd be fine. And they'd actually have an advantage because they would still be selling the consoles and still be selling the physical games, and not everybody can do digital.
Yeah. I will say this. I am completely perplexed by Reggie Fils-Aimé's decision because he is a person that I feel is pretty smart. And, like, he doesn't really lose anything by doing this because he isn't putting any stuff. Like, it's not like he's betting his career on this.
No, well, here's the thing. A lot of major people join dying companies because they know they're going to get a golden parachute when it dies. Like, that's why John Ricciatello, who used to be the CEO of EA, joined Telltale.
Mm-hmm.
God, that was. John Ricciatello, everything bad that you've ever heard from EA, is a lot of it is from John Ricciatello. Or Don Matrick joining Zynga. And Don Matrick was a shit, too. Everything bad that you heard about the Xbox One, that was Don Matrick's fault.
I mean, even given the case, I feel like Reggie Fils-Aimé is a person that has clout, and even if he isn't active, if Reggie Fils-Aimé were to say something like, what the fuck are you guys thinking?
Here's the thing. Is there any way Reggie Fils-Aimé can look bad? If the company fails? No, of course not. That's perfect for him. It looks good on a resume. You know, if he succeeds, it's all his fault. It's all, you know, give credit all to me. If it fails, well, it was dying anyway, and I kept it afloat.
It's, I still
like Reggie Fils-Aimé. Him and Kemi Dunaway, just give me the creeps. Kemi Dunaway was, oh God, she was an insane suburban mother. For those who don't know who Kemi Dunaway is, just look at Nintendo's 2006 E3.
Either way, GameStop stock plummeted with that decision.
Well, everybody's stock is plummeting, so it's not.
No, but they particularly they took a shit on their own stock when they tried to do that.
I still get my controllers and hardware from GameStop, and occasionally a game too. I mean, it's not like they're. If I want, you know, I had when I traded in my Xbox One, I traded it into GameStop. But, you know, the Xbox Series X comes out, I have a big decision in front of me. Do I want to trade in my Xbox One X, which has in green stenciled on it, Project Scorpio Edition?
That sounds like Collector's Edition.
And I still have my controller, still has Project Scorpio, but I don't have to trade that in. I might trade in the Project Scorpio Edition Xbox One X. It's not that big a deal to me. I saw some mock-ups for a Halo Xbox Series X. It looked really nice. And that always bugged me. I think we talked about this last week or the week before. They always come out with these special versions of the console for the people who worked on the console itself, like the white Xbox One. And I'm thinking, you know, if you had a limited run of 2,000 of those things, they would have been snapped up before you could even blink. You know what I'd like to see? A blood red Xbox Series X.
That would be cool. The Scarlet Edition.
Well, that was the Xbox. What are they calling? What is the? I forgot what the code name for the Xbox Series X was.
It wasn't Scarlet.
Project Scarlet was the Xbox One X. I'm talking about the Xbox Series X, the one that's coming out.
Huh.
I would love to see a blood red version of it. Blood red tower. Though it's not really that big a tower. If you see the controller next to it, it's like three times taller than the controller. By the way, everybody's raving about the Xbox Series X controller.
Yeah, okay, Xbox Series X is Project Scarlet. Project Scorpio is Xbox One.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, yeah, have a Project Scarlet Xbox Series X. And make it blood red.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's raving about the controller.
Maybe make it like the obelisk from Dead Space. Ridged and everything.
I did see 3DS, the special Mario edition, was selling for $169, and I was like, used at GameStop, and I was like so tempted to pick that up. It looked really nice. And there's a lot of 3DS games I'd wanted to try, but I didn't because I just passed up on it for the entire life of its system. So. One of the things I'm reading, by the way, about MLB The Show 20, the one that was released, is that the series is getting stale. And I'm finding it interesting, and I'm wondering if... See, here's the thing. We talked about this last week of the week. There's no competition. That's why Madden sucks. That's why NBA 2K sucks. That's why FIFA sucks. And now MLB The Show is starting to dive a little bit. Fortunately, it's not going to seem stale to Xbox owners because they haven't had the show, you know. But it's interesting that MLB, RBI Baseball 20, I'm seeing the reviews, they're all calling it decent, even though it's just an arcade game. Super Mega Baseball 4 is coming, and that's what I'm really interested in. But I'm wondering if I want to pick it up or just wait until it's on Game Pass. I don't know. So, yeah, so, DJ, did you pre-order Resident Evil 3?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I'm just gonna. No, I haven't. I want to play it all at once when it finally comes out.
Okay.
I've seen enough. Like, I mean, I work in the news, so I see things as they come out. So I've seen enough spoilers that I'm trying to sort of be cautious about seeing anything more. And I'm trying
not to. Did you play the original Resident Evil 3, though?
Yes, of course I did.
So here's the question. Was the plot different in the remake of Resident Evil 2?
Slightly. There were some, like, the main beats stayed the same, but
okay,
there were
no,
some interesting.
I only care about the main beats. I'm not talking about the little side thing. Mm-hmm. So probably the plot of Resident Evil 3 will probably remain the same, generally the same.
Yeah.
They're in the city, Nemesis comes out, starts wrecking shit up, you're in trouble.
But this time you've got a cool guy instead of a dork like Leon. Carlos is so cool looking in this one. I like how they redesigned him.
You know what? You know it would be a real nice surprise for Resident Evil 3? Have a play as Nemesis mode.
That's essentially what Project Resistance is.
No. I'm talking about the main story.
Ah.
So. Yeah, actually, you know, Project Resistance looks really good. I saw some gameplay videos for it. It's like Left 4 Dead 3.
Speaking of asymmetrical games, Predator Hunting Grounds has its free weekend coming up.
Okay.
So that's definitely it'll be over by the time this cast, but that is definitely something I want to talk about next week because I'm getting some buddies together to play it.
So Scott, what is the game that's going to break you from Animal Crossing?
I think possibly the Minecraft Dungeons.
Yeah, that's coming out soon too. I almost forgot about that.
Yes. Coming out April, I think the beta is out. People are testing it or playing it. And
what's the feedback on that?
Well, I believe it's like a Diablo, but with Minecraft skin. But it looks fun, and I think there is a lot of everybody gets something from kills when you're playing together. So it's like there's no loot hogging going on. Which I think leads to better gameplay, or better, you know, game play with other people. So looks like a good multiplayer game to play with the family, in other words.
They also announced some of the returning characters from Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 that are coming to Baldur's Gate 3. One of them is Viconia. Of course, Jahira is one of them.
They're all buff elves. Yep.
Jan is there, Aria is there, and of course, Corrin is there, and of course, you cannot not have a Baldur's Gate game without Minsk.
Of course.
Of course, Boo will be there too. Go for the eyes, Boo, go for the eyes.
Go for the eyes. Yeah, that's right.
Boo is so iconic, he appears in the Mass Effect games.
Yeah. All the characters you mentioned are either elves or halflings, so they have longer lives than humans, so...
Well, Minsk is human. Minsk is human. He's a barbarian.
Minsk is human, yes, but I think his character was turned to stone, and then somehow was brought back.
He was brought back. Statue, so he was recently unfrozen, and it was Corrin who was the one who unfroze him.
So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, he could not have Minsk and Boo. He's very
iconic.
You can't. You just can't. It's sad because I would have liked to see Imowen come back as well. She was a fun character.
Yeah. I think all of the ball spawn are dead now. They're all dead and the final one either attains godhood or...
Did Savarok survive?
He died. You kill him, and then I guess he gets brought back if
he got brought back for Baldur's Gate
2,
but that's what I mean. Does he get killed off again?
It's more like he gets left in hell, or you bring him out of hell if you want.
Maybe he'll be back too.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I know a lot of people love the villain turned hero, or at least you know, redeemed villain. They love that, and I think that's why Serpak got a brought back in the expansion.
Didn't get an alignment change, did he?
Yeah, you can get him an alignment change.
Really?
You can also do that with Vakona.
Okay.
Change their alignments. But there were other evil characters that did not change their alignments, though Edwin does change genders. But yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very interesting and fun game, and I can't wait to see what Larian does with Baldur's Gate 3.
Well, the real question is, John Jansen still going to be selling turnips?
Oh, definitely. I'm certain of it. And you'll be telling tall tales, you know, I knew the ball spawn.
Yeah.
It'll be good.
Yeah, Gnome's going to live to about 350 a year, so yeah, he's going to be there. So, anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net. Along with industry news and our gaming history articles, if you enjoy feedback, leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes comments and leave some... Subscribe to us in iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Fallon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Be cool. Play games, yo.